We're back. Welcome to yet another episode of Deep Thinking.
We're never front?
What do you mean? We can't front. Remember, that whole time thing is linear. It goes in one direction.
It flows like a river?
Yes.
Even rivers. Then it's all different.
People have reversed river flows.
Have you ever been to the Hoover Dam? It's always been a problem.
You ever been to the Hoover Dam?
I have.
That is just like so impressive.
It is a spectacular feat of engineering and labor and all of that shit.
One of my students did a speech on it recently, and I just thought, my parents brought me there 40-some years ago, and I can remember standing in the bowels of that thing going, holy crap,
how'd they do this?
Well,
and all of those dams are like that, right? They're all similar, right?
Just amazing stuff.
Basically, there's two ways you can build a dam, right? You can use the mass of the dam to hold it down, and the water's pushing on it, so that would be an earthen dam.
Right.
You have the dam has to weigh more than the force pushing on it.
Right.
Or you can use the shape of the dam, which is how they do all these curved, big dams, right? It's very thin, especially at the top, right?
Well, you're not holding back a lot of water at the top.
No, well, you're still holding back the totality of all the water in the river. And so, when I say very thin, right, you can still drive cars in both directions on the top of the thing. It's just thin compared to the base of the thing.
Okay.
But what you have to have is you have to have big canyon walls for that curve to push against. So the dam is built as a curve, and the water's pushing on it, and it's forcing it, and it then starts to bend out and shoves its outside edges into the solid rock. So you got to have like a Grand Canyon or something with solid rock, right? And so the first step, you know what the first step is to building these dams?
No.
You have to divert the water.
Well, yeah.
Right? So once you're all done, you got a dam. And then you have a tunnel that the water goes through to go to the turbines.
Right.
Okay. Why not just have the tunnel be in the dam? Well, because if you build a tunnel first and run the river through the tunnel, then you can build the dam, and then you use the tunnel for the place where you put the turbines.
That's genius.
Well, it saves the, it makes a lot simpler, right, to build a dam when it's no water in there, right? And then since you got the tunnel, well, then you can block the flow of the water, right, and put in your turbines after.
Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing and tunnel engineer.
It's just like if you go on a winery tour, right? Once you go on one winery tour, it's the same process to make all the wine at all the other places, right?
I'm not allowed to go on winery tours anymore, man. The judge was very specific about that.
Interestingly, it appears to me that winery tours have gone past the pretend tour. You just go straight to the bar part now, right? They call it tasting. It used to be
tasting room, right?
My parents took me on all these winery tours in Napa, right? And the pretext was we're learning how it works.
Right.
But I was a kid, but after a little while I learned it. You know what? At the end of all of these, my parents get sauced and the van weaves on the way back to the campground. And it's the same story, right? About how they're not going for the tour; they're going for the free wine.
Yeah, you're touring our crack production facility,
exactly.
Right? Exactly.
So yeah, engineering feats. You know those guys.
Wait. He's Ed Sorbo. I'm Michael Gugis. You can reach Ed on the web at le-suspension.com. That's Lindemann Engineering. You can read my thoughts on motorcycle road racing at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. And I have a question.
What's your question?
About motorcycles. Why the hell does Tony Serra's bike have the bolts on the windshield safety wired?
don't pick on Tony. He had a problem with them coming loose at some point.
And
he had drilled and safety wired them, which is not the solution I would have used. But it's Tony Serra, I just safety wired him properly for him.
And Tony Serra, whatever Tony Serra does is right.
Yeah,
our understanding of the world is incorrect.
And we're talking about his B bike, the older Ninja, the one that the kids call the first generation, 88 to 07. And that bike is going to be converted back into a street bike, and so his race bodywork is for sale, painted, perfect condition, used by an old man only on weekends. $500.
More terrifyingly, a fast old man is going to be on the streets again. That scares the crap out of me. Oh, man.
So, back to engineering shows.
Right.
So, who's the famous guy from Top Gear that just got in trouble and got fired by BBC?
It would involve television.
What's that guy's name? Anyway.
Jeremy something or other?
Yeah. Yeah, Jeremy. So, the other two guys, Hammond and Mr. Slowly, have their own shows. And Hammond does an awesome show about engineering, okay, where you, whatever the concept they're using, like let's say a torsion bridge, right?
Okay.
And he connects that engineering back to something like a bow, because a bow is under torsion.
Right.
Right? And then you get all this great access, you know, inside the legs that hold up a big bridge and shit like that. Mm-hmm. Okay? And then Mr. Slowly has a show, it's a man cave show. And they build this really cool man cave, and then they have all these projects they're doing, like they have a train that goes around the whole place and delivers beer and stuff like that. And you get to see how they build all this stuff and whatnot.
Right.
He had a really neat show about how they were disarming dud German bombs during the war.
How were they doing it?
So a lot of German bombs were duds, and the theory goes that a lot of those bombs were built by slave labor, and the slave labor people were finding ways because...
What did they care if they wanted off?
Well, they didn't want them to go off, right? They were doing their part. And on the other side of the story, it's very difficult to find Germans with stories of dud Allied weapons. And all right. The Allied weapons were being built by people who were not slaves. People were trying to... Okay? So yeah. Anyway...
You want to be careful about the motivation of the people who are building your weaponry. Well,
once you go as crazy as Hitler, there's all kinds of problems. Anyway, they developed a... So the bomb falls out of the airplane and doesn't go off. Okay. Well, now you don't want your enemy to get the bomb and right. be able to use the materials. And furthermore, you'd like to kill the people who have the skills to take the bomb apart.
Right.
So they put a backup fuse on it, which was time
right.
sensitive. And so the British solution was to make a small hole in this time device. You have to do it very gently. You don't want to shake it. And then pour in salt water with a lot of salt. And then come back in half an hour, and the salt water has encrusted the works, and the clock stops, and you can take the thing apart. And so they did a faked version of all of this.
Absolutely,
you
know, genius.
It's a really fun show to watch. There's a lot of great ways to find engineering shows and learn about how dams are built and whatever.
Have you ever been to Death Valley and the place that they call the Devil's
No, you know Vault? The name of that place kind of... I've been to Willow Springs. I figured it was close enough.
There's a place out there.
And Chuck Walla.
Right? There's a salt flat called the Devil's Golf Course.
Okay.
And it's really, really heavy salt content on the surface. Mm-hmm. So it's all cracked. It forms these bitching crystals. And in the afternoon, when the temperature is rapidly rising, if you stand there, it's quiet enough, you can hear the ground cracking and pinging. It's cool. Really cool. It's really awesome. Ed, let's talk about motorcycle road racing. You want to talk about Grand Prix road racing because you think that you have accurately predicted something that was going to happen.
I think the evidence supports my
There's no
view.
Evidence. What is it that you wanted to talk about or whatever?
So before the season started, Michael chose...
Marquez
to win the championship.
And he's still going
to
win. Absolutely certain.
He could still win if he turns his season around to what he did last year. I mean, anything's possible.
Right.
And Mark and MG wasn't alone in that prediction.
Right.
But I, on the other hand, said that Pedroza was going to win the championship.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, it looks like the secret wrist problem is going to prevent him from winning a championship.
Correct.
But I think that his recovery from that surgery and his results are looking good. And yeah. he's going to win races this year. And so I'm going to call that a draw on my prediction.
But the main... I'm going to give myself a pass on that. God damn it, Ed, you are my hero.
The main point of this was that my reasoning...
I'm bitching and I'm...
was that the guys who didn't win last year are motivated to try new
yes.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yamaha clearly tried a bunch of stuff. I'm not so sure that the Honda is necessarily bad now. It might just be that the Yamaha is that much better and the Honda didn't improve. And then now they're struggling. That's what we want to talk about. What's going on? What's the dynamic there? Never mind the individual rider who's going to win the championship.
Right.
That's why you have teams of guys who are capable. Right? There's four guys who can win the championship.
Right.
Guess what? All four of them are in the two-factor teams.
Right? Exactly, right?
And we're not counting Ducati in this because despite the fact that they're doing great, and this is a neat point, the commentators who work for Dharma, right?
Dornob.
They call it as though it's one race, as they should. If you need to have rules to get more people into the show, then you can't be calling it, oh yeah, but they're cheating constantly, right? You can't say that. And so
you could.
You could, but it would not, it would defeat the whole purpose.
Right.
and putting an asterisk after, that's all silly. Everybody agreed that we're going to do this system to help other guys along. It's better for the sport overall. Play the game all the way. So when you hear them say how fast a Ducati is, remember, that's with 2 extra liters of fuel. And that means the thing, no, no, 2. It was 4.
Right.
They took away 2. Now they're at 2. Mm-hmm. They were only actually using 2 anyway.
And they were going fast. They were right? bloody fast. They've always been fast.
I have no doubt the Ducati is fast. It has horsepower. But some of that will go away when they have to run 2 less liters.
No, they're not. They're never going to have to run 2 less.
Because next year, everybody gets
22.
Well, then that means the Honda and the Yamaha a little bit faster. Because the systems pay attention to how much fuel is in the bike.
Right.
And by the way, if they can make a fuel gauge in a gas tank accurate enough for the computer, right, to tweak the amount of fuel it gets on the straightaway, why can't you make a gauge on a motorcycle?
Halfway decent one for a street bike.
Yeah, we're not asking for a lot.
Exactly.
Let's get within, I don't know, a quarter of a tank,
Exactly,
God,
right.
Really?
Yeah, you know,
the ones that I see now are useless.
I mean, just absolutely.
They're actually worse than useless because
flashing,
you think you could use it.
Right, it's flashing red at you. You go and you can only put half the capacity of the tank in. Then you've got to guess and blah, 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 blah.
So my point was that the Yamahas and the others are going to try harder and they're going to come up with new stuff.
Yes.
And that Honda's going to be forced to keep more or less what they have. And that, the result of that now is, for whatever combination of the two things, Yamaha's ahead of Honda bike-wise. And then Marquez is showing his fatal flaw. The thing that made it possible for him to win all those races last year was 13.
It's something like that.
They're like crazy. It's impossible, right? Is that he can't take second place.
Exactly.
And
just
twice
will
this
not.
Year. Like, dude, the guy didn't even make it into the fast qualifying session.
That was his team's fault.
No, I know, but he didn't make it.
Right.
And the result of that was what? He's fourth at the end of the first lap from what? 82nd on the grid. You could start that guy a mile behind everybody else, and he's going to be fourth at the end of the first lap.
Yeah, but they don't know how to settle for second.
He doesn't really. When he crashed, right, he was in a left-hand turn where he went too fast, and he ran wide. So then he goes into the right, and so what everybody has to go, like, oh, you're going to have to go a little slower in the right-hand now. Marquez is, nah, you know, just as fast.
I got this.
And then the bike goes on its side, and he saved it for like 10 yards, right? Like, you're like, he crashed, but it's still curving. He's still, could he? And then finally, when he's in the dirt, when the bike flips over, he goes, damn it, I can't save this anymore. You got to love the guy. I mean, he tries so hard.
But it is the fatal flaw.
But he got a 0 instead of, how many points do you get for 4? I don't know, but a lot more than 0.
It's a lot more than 0. Same thing in Argentina. You know, he had second place sewn up. Absolutely.
He did.
Absolutely second. And just like,
I'm second. Fuck that. That's bullshit.
He was probably raised by Ricky Bobby's dad, the guy from Talladega Nights, right? If you ain't first, you're last. Ed, here's where you're wrong.
Now the show gets interesting.
Well, it's two things.
Okay.
First,
it takes more than 2 prove to me that I'm wrong.
Cut back to 2010.
Okay.
And
in my Wayback Machine.
World Superbike, they're running a spec tire. Okay. Leon Haslam is riding for Suzuki, and he's doing really well. Now
you're digging deep.
Okay, right.
Keep going.
Pirelli brings 3 tires to every race, but it's usually the same 3 tires.
Okay.
Okay. So you know how the bike's going to work on those tires. Everybody picks the one, right? Pirelli changes the specification mid-season. All of a sudden, Haslam is nowhere.
Right.
Absolutely nowhere. And he loses the title. I think Biaggi beat him that year. So every year, the Bridgestone, the MotoGP tire, is a little different. It's a little different. And I've already heard one of the Yamaha guys saying, the tires they're bringing next weekend are different. They are different. So you don't know if the tire... I got a fly that's bothering the living crap out of me.
He likes how you smell.
Right? You know, I get that a lot.
Get my sweater. Hold
flies
still.
Flies and supermodels. It's awful. You know?
Stuff has changed. The bike, the tires.
I know. And I really wonder if it's not the tires that are making the Yamaha.
Well, Yamaha was complaining about the tire.
Right.
It didn't work as well for them.
Right.
That's the nature of this
stuff. The ebb and flow of these things. And here's the other thing. Look who has responded to the tire this year allegedly has more edge grip. And look who suddenly came back to life with edge grip. Lorenzo.
Well, it's no surprise.
That's his strength. He can get through the middle of a corner at speed, just leaving the guys looking at data going, And what's his name? Crutchlow used to look at that and say that. He's like, I don't know how he's doing that. I'm on the ground. If I'm at that speed at that point in the corner, my elbow's on the ground, and it's not because I'm dragging it. It's because the bike is on the ground.
I'm going to make another prediction.
I'm listening.
As soon as you see Crutchlow start winning MotoGP races, you'll be able to look back at the times in practice,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see him running strings of good times instead of doing one fast lap and coming in, which is what he does all the time now.
I think when you see Crutchlow winning GP races, you'll see the end of the world as we know it. I think it'll be right after the sun, you know, goes out.
I don't think it's that impossible, but he does have to change his style, his personality,
you know,
to run those strings. Man, when you watch Lorenzo and Rossi out there,
yeah, they're boom, just boom, 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 boom,
you're like,
right.
Okay, those guys own that skill, right? Mm-hmm. That speed set. And folks, is the key to your personal improvement on the racetrack.
Yeah, boy, we're going to talk about them again?
they might send the sick refarm.
Exactly,
keep stroking
right?
them. So we have some change in, well, we know the Honda's a little different and the Yamaha's a little different.
Honda's got a little bit more power this year. Brit tires are a little bit different.
You know, that's a classic thing, right? What do we always say
when
your bike is slow, horsepower, why, man, but it handles great.
Greg, Rob Muzzi's favorite quote, every bike without enough power handles great.
Yeah. And if you give a bike too much power, it becomes a evil, horrible, and worse than that, it does that thing where it's inconsistent.
Right.
It works sometimes, and other times you're like, what happened?
Right.
And so, man,
it's like a new bike.
At that level, I think, you know, like if you take your street bike and you give it 50 more horsepower, it's going to be evil. No question, right?
Okay.
But I think those bikes, if you give it 2 more horsepower, it goes over the threshold of what it can handle. You had to redesign everything, right?
Is that right? Okay.
Because the thing that people don't think about, it's not just the extra horsepower and the acceleration. It's the increased spinning inertia of the crankshaft. Okay, so we all understand that the faster the wheels go, the more gyroscopic stability I have.
Right.
Okay, and then the harder it is to make the bike change direction. The crankshaft is massively wider than your wheels.
But how does having more horsepower...
It's spinning faster.
Oh, you mean,
and therefore,
okay,
it has more inertia.
More horsepower via more RPM. That makes sense.
And so then it just makes more work for the whole chassis. And so if your chassis was almost strong enough, when you're changing the direction of the bike, right? The wheels are trying to go this way.
Right.
And the crankshaft is all, no, I want to stay over here. And that fight between...
Which is held together.
The frame, it's all making a big rubber band.
Right.
And if it's the right thickness and the right flexi, and it's all
great. You feel like a god.
And if it's not, it's
a little bit off.
Dude, speaking of, how about the Suzuki's high side at the top of the hill at France?
I didn't see it.
Oh, man, I was wishing he had the airbag air suit when he did that crash. That was scary. That was an old, no, he has a different brand of leathers.
Okay.
That was an old school 500 GP bike. Everything looks great. And then, poof, the rider is upside down in the air, going over 100 miles, and it's at the crest of a hill. Oh. So the ground's getting farther away. like, show a parachute, man. Fly, flap, something. And then, wham, and he hits the ground. He freaking bounces.
I wonder if you have that moment. I wonder if you have that moment of awareness when you're like, oh, and just to make things worse, the ground is still getting further.
And then he gets back on the bike and he races. So he tries to race and the bike breaks.
Yeah.
Oh, poor guy.
Man.
Talk about heart.
Yeah.
Of course, at that level, you don't get to even consider that. Those guys, the guy who finished last place has worked hard and overcome obstacles and put up with shit that most people are like,
can't
what?
Can't even imagine.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know? And that's why I was talking about in the last podcast about, what's his name, Jacobson? Another U.S. kid I want to give a shout out to, James Rispoli. Okay, I love that interview with him on Crash.net where he says his dad had a phone in his hand when he was 14 calling sponsors.
You know, we talked about that a while ago, right?
Yeah.
About how the personal relationship, the keeping up with your sponsors,
the
letting them know what you did and the telling them thank you and all that stuff. Most people don't come close to that.
Yeah,
and
but that's part of your job.
That's
part of the job. We don't like to think about that. We don't want to talk about it. Because the fact is that Marquez and Lorenzo and Rossi don't have to do that anymore.
Well, I don't know. I would say that they do that. They have to be at all those things.
Good point.
Schedule.
Okay. But they're not on the phone begging for money.
Not themselves, but I'd be willing to bet that a lot of
their
deals...
That their agent
I'm going to say that most of those deals finalize with a conversation, an interview that involves a writer. Because the guy who's writing that big of a check wants to make sure that this guy really is what they think he is.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and guys like Rossi, they can't walk from the back of their garage to their motorhome.
Right.
Without stopping and signing autographs.
Right.
And they have to do it, because if they don't,
right,
unless they're running, carrying their leathers, and it's obvious that, oh, shit, you know, right, then they look like an asshole. And you can't be, you know, Yamaha and all the sponsors don't want to see that, right? Hey, 2-minute warning.
Okay.
2-minute board. But
I want to add to something that you said.
We didn't make a conclusion to what we're talking about yet.
What? Have we even come up with a point? But I do want to add something. I think the suspicion about the Honda and the power thing is correct, because look at where they're starting to look for the fixes. New swing arms. That's usually an indication.
Yeah, and I find it interesting. Well, that's always a tricky thing to figure out, right? Exactly how much chassis flex. And this is another thing I like about Pedroza, right? He's coming back from the surgery, yada, yada, yada. He tried both swing arms, but it appears to be he's like, listen, let's just stick with this old one.
Right.
And just ride the bike and get, right? We got the guy on our team who's going to go at the front if it's at all possible.
Right.
I'm going to fill the role of being the guy who finishes and gets the data and yada, 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 you know? I'm having fun watching all the dynamics of all this stuff.
It's
a great comment on the quality of the coverage that we get to see all of this behind the scenes stuff.
And it's a great comment on the quality of all those riders.
Oh, dude, you know? They're so impressive.
They're just amazing. Just amazing. All right, 2-minute board. What do you got?
I got nothing.
You got nothing?
Nothing.
I got something. I like watching. One of my favorite things about racing is watching the kids come up into a new class and seeing if they can make it or not. Because you usually know within half a season whether they're going to get to the class above them or not. You don't fight your way through Moto 3 or Moto 2 to get a MotoGP ride. You walk in and you dominate. I haven't seen that yet this year. I'm looking at Fabian Quartararo and Alex Rins. And then neither of them have won yet. Neither of them have dominated. But it's been really nice to watch them, because both of them have been bloody fast, right at the front. Rins has got a pole, you know? And there's good racing karma with Alex Rins, because he, last year, fought like hell to get Alex Marquez that Moto3 title at the last race. Is it Jerez? Was the last race of the season? Or is it Valencia? I forget. But yeah,
Valencia is the last race.
He was one of those people that was like waving Marquez past. And I think they might still be trying to fix Miller's bike from when Rins ran into it on the side of the road. It's nice to see the kids coming up through the ranks. And it's always, you always root for them to do really well initially, because it's the momentum up the ladder. Not just how well you do, but it's the momentum up there.
Well, you're talking about, you know, trying to find the next Marquez guy. You know, there
maybe. I mean, even at the satellite ride, you know.
Well, but what I mean by the next Marquez guy is if money can come in and dominate and win everything and all that stuff. I'm more interested in finding the next Lorenzo guy. You know, the next Rossi guy, the guy who can do it for a long time and does the job well and doesn't, you know. Who's the kid that had to start from the last row because he rammed somebody on the cooldown lap in the Moto 3 race and broke the guy's arm or collarbone or something?
Well, you know? Marquez did that once at Moto 2.
Well, Marquez did it in races making bad passes.
No, he did it once in practice and it was really bad.
No, this was on the cooldown lap after a race.
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about.
The guy's name starts with an R. He's on Rossi's team, right?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the Moto 2.
I'm interested in the well-rounded person that does the whole package. And I'd much rather, if I were a billionaire sponsored company, you know, I want the guy who's going to be around for a long time, isn't going to do that kind of stuff. And so I'm not necessarily interested in the guy who can win 12 races in a row by a million miles.
I want
the guy that, I get it for the excitement purpose. And that's just one of the differences between us. But a lot of it has to do with, I am that guy. I'm the endurance racer guy myself, right? So I like that style better than the crazy fast guy.
And it's nice, and I'll be honest with you, it's really nice to be able to root for athletes who seem to be nice people in real life.
That makes all the
difference, you know? And it's funny because if you're not sellable, if you're not a useful spokesperson for your product, no matter how much talent you have, you're not as valuable as the next rider who's just as good. And let's face it, man.
Yep. You know, no, that's true. And it used to be in the big economy, both guys could get jobs.
Right.
Right now,
and now
it's more likely, at least in the long term, that the Josh Hayes guys are going to have the job.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's a thing to keep in mind. If you know, you're crazy to try to pursue a career in this sport. Okay.
Right.
Even if you're trying to do it the way I did it, which is use the racing to amass enough knowledge to be able to do a business that's related to it. Right.
Right.
But you can totally use this sport to develop good people skills, or I don't know, people skills, but good
business skills yeah, yeah.
that you can use in any endeavor.
Absolutely.
And that's all good. I'm Ed Sorbo.
I'm Michael Gugis. Aloha.